Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
I will say the second main lesson from the Bolivarian Revolution is that you cannot make half a revolution. If you stop halfway, you are digging your own grave, really.
That's the voice of Jorge Martin from Hands Off Venezuela. On this week's show, we speak to Jorge about the U.S. elections and their impact on Latin America, and specifically Venezuela. So stay tuned.
I'm very privileged this morning to be joined by Jorge Martí. He is the Secretariat of Hands Off Venezuela. Welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be with you again.
Now, Jorge, the world woke up to the Bolivarian Revolution, this idea that a new way could be forged away from capitalism. With the impending election results in the U.S., one of the most powerful countries and one of the most influential economies in this hemisphere, what are the threats that this poses to the Bolivarian Revolution?
First of all, we have to say that the Bolivarian Revolution has been under threat and the constant attack by the United States government for the last, for the best part of 15 years, particularly since December 2001. And so anything that happens in the United States will have an influence on the Bolivarian revolution. But in the last 15 years, we've seen governments come and go, Democrats and Republicans. And in general, the policy of the United States towards the Bolivarian revolution has not changed substantially. We had overt intervention, the participation of the United States in the coup in April 2002. But even after that, we've had a constant stream of attacks by the U.S. In the form of sanctions, in the form of diplomatic pressure, in the form of the United States funding opposition groups in Venezuela. Sometimes these groups have resorted to violence to try to overthrow the government. And this, as I was saying, has happened under Republican administrations, but also under Democratic administrations. For instance, right now, Obama, earlier this year, extended sanctions, which he decreed 2 years ago, against high-ranking officials in Venezuela, against PDVSA, and he signed an extension of a presidential order which declares that Venezuela is a threat to the national security of the United States. So that's the first thing that we need to understand, that there's been a constant intervention for all these years, and it has not mattered whether it was a Republican or a Democratic administration. Now, if you look at the two candidates in the U.S. Presidential elections, you see that on the one hand, you have Hillary Clinton, and Hillary Clinton herself has a history of promoting imperialist policies in Latin America. She was directly involved in the organization of the coup in Honduras against the democratically elected president Manuel Zelaya and the instauration of a military government. But also, she's been involved in meddling with the internal affairs of Venezuela. In fact, the WikiLeaks revealed emails from her private server reveal that she's been constantly discussing different ways of putting pressure on the Venezuelan government, be that through the funding of opposition groups, be that through putting pressure on other regional players to attack Venezuela or to distance themselves from Venezuela, in the case of Brazil, for instance. So I will say that if Clinton wins the presidential election, which seems to be the most likely prospect at this point, this will not be good news in any way for Venezuela. But of course, if Trump, Donald Trump wins, that will not be good news either. Donald Trump has not said much about Venezuela during his election campaign. But the one time when he was in Florida in one of the election rallies, he made very strong noises against Cuba. He, for instance, rejected Obama's policy of reestablishing diplomatic relations with Cuba. And he also said that he will adopt a hard policy or hard stance against the Bolivarian Revolution, that the Venezuelan people want freedom and they are under an oppressive government, and this and the United States must use its power to put an end to that. So that doesn't bode well for the Bolivarian Revolution if Trump were to win the presidential election. So in reality, from the point of view of Latin American policies, progressive policies, There is not much to choose from between the two presidential candidates. That's the truth. One we know because of what she's already done, and the other one we fear for what he might do if he gets elected.
Unfortunately, you know, the stark reality of many countries, right, after this neoliberalist era of consolidating, you know, power in the hands of very few, we see that in the United States, at least, the options don't seem to bring much change. The question we need to ask, though, is it's always a movement, it's always done from the people at the grassroots level. You know, I mean, political solutions are important, as they have been demonstrated in the case of Venezuela, where the government took action to implement systematic approaches to increase education, health, and other benefits that create the foundational pieces, right, for a society to develop. So how do we reconcile then the challenges being faced by the Bolivarian Revolution and the way moving forward? Because in so many ways we can also point out that there are a lot of people speaking of the Bolivarian Revolution at this point as something that has failed. How would you respond to those critics?
The Venezuelan Revolution, without any doubt, is facing a very difficult period for the last 2 or 3 years. One could say this coincided with the death of President Chavez, so we don't really know if he will have acted in a different way. But the truth is that there are serious difficulties facing the Venezuelan Revolution. The situation in Venezuela is nowhere near what the mass media are describing, a situation where people are starving, where they have no food and so on. But there is a serious economic crisis, and there is a scarcity of many basic food products. We need to understand why this is happening before we can say who is at fault. I would say that one of the main factors is the massive collapse in the price of oil. As many people probably know, the price of oil about 2-3 years ago was $140 a barrel. And earlier this year, Venezuelan oil was selling at $27 a barrel. This is a massive collapse in the price of oil, which oil being the commodity that provides about 90% of the revenues which make up the Venezuelan state budget. So this obviously had a big impact on the Venezuelan economy and the ability of the government to spend this money in social projects, be those in the field of housing, education, healthcare, or others. So this was an important factor. Added to this is the constant sabotage of the economy on the part of the private sector. The Venezuelan government, about 10-12 years ago, introduced price controls and controls of foreign exchange, which were designed to protect the poor and prevent the flight of capital. But in reality, what we have learned, we already warned at the time, is that you cannot regulate capitalism. Capitalism works precisely on the basis of free market, and producers will produce if they think they can sell for a profit. And if they think that the regulated prices that the government has imposed and not allowing them a big enough profit margin, they will not produce. And this is what's been happening in Venezuela for the last 10-15 years, that the private sector has refused to invest in the economy, has refused to produce, has withdrawn products from the market with a specific intention of creating discontent and opposition to the government. And this situation continues now, but is much more aggravated by the collapse of the price of oil. So in reality, what you could argue is that what has failed in Venezuela is the attempt to regulate capitalism. It's not socialism, because there isn't socialism in Venezuela. Yes, there is a progressive government which has carried out many social programs that are wide ranging and affect a lot of people, have massively improved the living conditions of millions of people in Venezuela, particularly those at the lower end of the social scale. But socialism, there isn't. The main factories, the main sectors of the economy are still controlled by private capitalists, and they are the ones who are sabotaging the economy and waging an investment strike, really. So I wouldn't say that what has collapsed is socialism, but the opposite, that the government has not been radical enough in implementing socialist measures. Has been subjected to a campaign of sabotage and destabilization by the capitalists in Venezuela. Just to give you one example, there is a major company, a monopoly company called Grupo Empresas Polar. And Empresas Polar controls a large part of the food production, processing and distribution chain in Venezuela, including, for instance, about 55% of the production of maize flour, harina pan, which is part of the staple diet in Venezuela for making arepas and other products. And they basically been sabotaging the distribution of these products for many years now. And there's ample proof of this, people know. The government has consistently threatened them with expropriation if they continue to sabotage the economy, but has never gone beyond the threats, has never actually taken action and expropriate this company, which is what I think should happen from any point of view. So what has failed in Venezuela is not socialism, is the attempt to regulate capitalism. If they had introduced more socialist measures, they'll probably be in a better position to face the economic, very difficult economic situation they are facing now.
In many ways, Latin America has been the target for many U.S. invasions over the last 100 years. In the past decade, that focus of the U.S. seems to have shifted to the Middle East, and many argue that that was what created the opportunity for Venezuela to not only create this beautiful revolution, which we call it the beautiful revolution because no one has to die, you know, in order to create a massive change in the society. And yet, with corporate media entrenched, and as you point out, many of the oligarchs and businesses continuing to control the marketplace, how do then does this move to socialism take place now?
I will say that it is true that the imperialism has been more concentrated in other areas of the world, like in the Middle East. But at the same time, they haven't let up on their attacks in against Venezuela, for instance, or against Ecuador, or the intervention in Honduras, in Paraguay, in Cuba, and so on. What is true to say is that because the world is now a more unstable place, the United States is the only policeman in this more dangerous neighborhood. They're faced with many different problems at the same time. They can't deal with all of them in the same way as before. That's true, and that's created a certain space for the Bolivarian Revolution for many years. It was a combination of that and also a period of high oil prices, which allowed for this to happen. In other countries, like for instance in Ecuador or even in Peru, and other countries also benefited from high prices of commodities and raw materials and minerals and so on, partly because of the massive growth of the Chinese economy. But this is now coming to an end. So we see like the end of a cycle in a whole number of countries, although the situation in Brazil or Argentina cannot be compared to the Venezuelan Revolution. But they had certain similarities in the sense that also in these two other countries, there were governments that claimed to be progressive and implemented certain social reforms. In different degrees. Obviously, you cannot compare the government of the PT in Brazil, which really managed capitalism, with the government of Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, which attempted to destroy capitalism. But that period has come to an end, that hiatus of opportunity, if you want, where you could take some of these measures without necessarily challenging capitalism itself. And now that opportunity is gone, and in reality, this, in my opinion, should lead us to have a rethink about political strategy and where we're going next. As for the mass media, this is clear. The mass media have been lying and distorting news about Venezuela for 15 years. This is not a new thing. But in the past, Venezuela was able to cut through this and have a big influence. The Bolivarian Revolution had a massive influence throughout Latin America, because people could see through concrete example how, for instance, in Venezuela, 1 million new homes were built and delivered free of charge to people in need, how illiteracy was abolished, how healthcare was delivered to the poorest neighborhoods in the big cities and in rural areas. And so that was a good example that people wanted to follow. But even the Bolivarian Revolution inspired people beyond that. Hugo Chavez was extremely popular in the Arab world, where people could see that they were also oil-producing countries, but instead of the oil wealth being used for the benefit of the majority, was used to enrich a parasitical minority at the top. It also had an impact in Europe and in the United States and Canada, where big solidarity movements emerged. So yes, the mass media have power and they can shape public opinion, but only to a certain extent. And it comes a time when people's own experience trumps that, and people start to think, okay, if this mass media are lying to us about what is happening in our own country, should we maybe not question what they're saying about what is happening in Venezuela? In Spain, for instance, this is the case. They've been lying so much about Venezuela. Obviously, the Spanish capitalist multinational companies have lots of interest in Latin America, and they've been raising a lot of noise against Venezuela. And they also attempted to taint the new left-wing party in Spain, Podemos, with the brush of corrupt and violent dictatorial Venezuela, as they like to present it. But this didn't work. This didn't stop people voting for Podemos. And this didn't stop Podemos go from nothing to 20% of the votes in a very short space of time. Why is this? Is it because people understand what is happening in Venezuela? No, not necessarily. But people understand what is happening in Spain. They want a radical alternative. And they cut through the fog of lies and distortions of the media, at least in a certain degree, so that certain layer of the population no longer believe what they're being told, and they are voting for a radical alternative, because that's what they need.
Sometimes I think when we have no choice, the decision is made easier, right? So faced with the choice that, you know, capitalism cannot be regulated, you know, it cannot be trained to be nice or humane or well behaved. We as a society who wants to create a way of life that allows everyone to, you know, be able to live here, how do our movements come together or create that path to socialism or whatever, you know, we want to call it, away from this history of capitalism, away from this history of repression that we are miring at this moment?
Yes. Well, the first thing we need to understand, in my opinion, is that socialism is a system that can only be, in the last instance, established at an international level, because capitalism is also an international system that covers the entire planet. In order to challenge that, it's not enough to do it in one country. It has to be done internationally. I think that President Hugo Chavez did understand that, and he even at one point called for the formation of a fifth international. And he specifically said it must be a socialist international, it must be an anti-capitalist international. I think that's completely correct. But unfortunately, this was never put into practice. There were people around him and people involved in the Bolivarian Revolution who were against this idea and basically blocked it. I think that this was a big mistake. We need an international movement for socialism, and particularly at this time when you look around the world and you see how revolutionary events are not limited to one country or two countries or perhaps to one area of the world as used to be the case in the past, but now there are revolutionary events or potentially revolutionary events taking place in many parts of the world. It's a manifestation of the crisis of capitalism, which is affecting everywhere. We've seen mass movements and big battles against austerity policies in Greece, for instance, huge mobilizations in Spain, the Arab Spring revolutions in Egypt, in Tunisia, in other countries, a massive shift to the left, say, for instance, here in Britain, where Corbyn has been elected twice, the leader of the Labour Party, or even the Bernie Sanders campaign, which ended up in nothing, but nevertheless revealed the massive interest that existed amongst particularly the youth for the ideas of socialism. And all these, I think, are manifestations of the crisis of capitalism and the growing questioning of this system, a system that cannot offer basic living conditions for the majority of the population, the massive crisis of legitimacy of institutions in many advanced capitalist countries. So I think that, yes, we do need a movement for socialism. This movement arises not out of our conscious will, but arises out of the needs of the majority of working people around the world. The task of socialists, the task of Marxists, is to give it a more conscious expression, to promote our ideas, to learn the experiences of previous revolutions, the history of the working class movement for the last 150 or 170 years, so that we can intervene in the processes that are taking place today and make sure that this time the revolutionary wave is not defeated but is victorious.
In many ways, Venezuela has been of late the most vibrant example of bottom-up leadership and mobilization. What advice would you offer to President Maduro as he moves forward trying to continue that growth of not just autonomy, you know, because in many ways as the people, as we become acquainted with a new way, we're also exercising our own way of understanding power, that there is power within everyone and that when we're together we're unstoppable. So what advice would you offer him as he navigates this period?
I think there is a speech that Chavez gave when he started suffering from his illness, and that offers really the way forward. This speech is called "Golpe de Timón," turning the rudder, and he basically said there's two things that need to be done in Venezuela. One is to create a socialist economy away from capitalism, and two, to do away with the bourgeois capitalist state and create a communal state based on the committees at the ground level. And unfortunately, this has not been put in practice. And I think that this is the only way forward. And I will say that the Venezuelan Revolution is in dire straits. It's in a very difficult situation. And unless these two measures are taken, then the Bolivarian Revolution will be defeated in electoral terms in the very near future. It was already defeated in the National Assembly elections about 10 months ago, but there could be a further defeat in the presidential recall referendum early next year. Unless the revolution can prove that it can solve the basic problems that the masses are facing now, then many people will become despondent, disillusioned, skeptical, and will maybe not vote for the opposition directly, but they will cease to vote for the Bolivarian Revolution. And that's the worst thing that can happen. The Bolivarian Revolution can only survive if it becomes more radical, if it strikes decisive blows against capitalism, and destroys the remainder of the bourgeois state, which is sabotaging the revolutionary initiative of the masses. That's what I would say.
What is the lesson for countries witnessing, you know, the struggle in Venezuela, and what is our responsibility globally to this movement?
I will say the main lesson from the Bolivarian Revolution is twofold. One, that when the masses start to move, they have enormous strength. In Venezuela, the revolutionary masses stopped the counter-revolution on 3, 4, 5 decisive occasions, in which the counter-revolution had organized a coup. The coup had the support of the capitalist class. The coup had the support of U.S. government, of Spanish imperialism. And nevertheless, the masses defeated this coup. The masses also showed enormous initiative in organizing workers' control, the takeover of factories, the creation of revolutionary committees that covered the whole length of the country. And so this is the first lesson. The revolutionary initiative of the masses is an enormous force that can move anything if they want to. The second one, I will say the second main lesson from the Bolivarian Revolution, is that you cannot make half a revolution. If you stop halfway, you are digging your own grave, really. Once the masses are active and politically motivated and organized, and the ruling class is already afraid, fearful, and blows have been stricken against them, you cannot stop halfway, because then they will come back. And the vacillations and half measures will set the basis for undermining the revolution amongst the masses, which are the ones that have been pushing it forward. So I will say these are two main lessons. It is possible to have a mass mobilization for socialism. People will respond, people will organize and will raise their own level of understanding. Second, you cannot carry out half a revolution.
What inspires you that we can get this done?
I have visited Venezuela many times in the last 12 or 13 years, and I think it's a very inspiring experience. What we have seen there, we have seen workers taking over factories and running them under workers' control with no bosses. We have seen revolutionary masses, even people who have no previous political experience, people who have no formal training or education, taking their lives into their own hands by setting up revolutionary committees and so on. This is really a demonstration of the enormous power of the working people when they get organized. We already knew this from previous revolutions, but I will say that the Venezuelan Revolution is the one example where this process has gone further and deeper in the 21st century so far. And there's no reason why this cannot happen in any other country. I mean, working people are much the same everywhere. They might live in slightly different conditions, but they all suffer the exploitation at work, the exploitation in the home, the exploitation in their neighborhoods. And when offered a clear alternative, they will fight for it in Venezuela and elsewhere.
My guest is Jorge Martin. He's the Secretariat of Hands Off Venezuela. For more information, how can people access your work?
Yes, we have a website which is called handsoffvenezuela.org. You can also find us on Facebook.
Thank you so much for being with us. Take care.
A pleasure.
Bye-bye.
We've come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is an internationally syndicated weekly program made available through campus and community stations, and available out to the world at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Visit Latin Waves Media to hear previous shows, to access resources, or support our efforts towards social change via community project engagement. Thank you, and bye for now.